Welcome to the Fitness FAQs podcast, where we learn from the smartest people in the world. I'm your host, Daniel Vadnall, a physio from Australia with more than 15 years of calisthenics experience. Greg O'Gallagher is a fitness entrepreneur who is best known as the creator of Keno Body. His method helps you achieve a lean and muscular physique through a combo of intermittent fasting, smart training, and lifestyle optimization. Discover how to get the body of your dreams in a sustainable way without sacrificing health. What would you say is the Keno Body philosophy?
Yep, so the Keno Body philosophy initially was really all about looking like a movie star. And Keno actually translates to movie in German, movie body. And as I really tried to uncover how to look like a movie star, I started hitting a lot of roadblocks with building strength, roadblocks with getting lean. And really the thesis, as far as looking like a movie star, is that most people are training way too much. They're in the gym, spending way too much time in the gym. They're following routines by guys that are on steroids, and they wonder why they're not getting the same results. I find less is more. 2 to 3 intense lifts per week is designed to trigger the strength and muscle required to support a movie star physique. And then really the game is getting leaner, and that is mastering the calorie deficit. I do fasting. I have a certain diet structure where I eat light into a big feast and have a little bit of dessert at night. The challenge that most people face, right, with fat loss and getting lean, and I'd say like if we're looking at the whole population as a whole, gaining muscle is not really as big of a problem as fat loss. Most people really, their strongest desire is to get leaner. And most people's health issues are largely because they are carrying excess fat. So the real problem that we're solving in the majority of people is helping them get lean. And a lot of things hold true. Whether you're trying to lose 50 pounds or you're trying to get down to single digit, you have to be in a calorie deficit. And the challenge that we're facing is adherence. Most people can't adhere to a diet, and I struggled. I struggled to stay in a calorie deficit. I struggled getting lean and dieting. And it's funny because if you're just trying to get to like 15% body fat, it's not that hard. Like obviously there's temptations and it can be very psychological, but physiologically it's not that hard to get to 15% body fat. When you're trying to get to single digit, 7, 8%, 6%, it is hard. And that was my goal. It was, how do I actually get razor sharp lean? When you see someone like Ryan Reynolds or Brad Pitt on the movie screen that cut for a role, how do I get that look? When you got 20 pounds of fat to lose, it's actually like very comfortable and cozy. It's a psychological challenge. When you're in a calorie deficit, when you're 9% body fat, it is harder for sure. And so I focus on how do I crack that code. And again, look, you could create any diet in the world. And sure, if the calorie deficit is there, enough protein is there, that will get you lean. That's not the challenge we're facing. It's how do we actually create a approach, a strategy that people can stick to? And that's sort of been like the biggest sort of problem that I cracked for myself. And I shared it, and we've gotten tons of people that have really gravitated to this approach and got really, really good results. But again, a lot of the fitness industry kind of is chasing the wrong goose. The goose is adherence. How do you get people to adhere to a diet? And that's hard. And sure, there's even at the highest echelon of fitness, the guys that are stepping on stage, doing shows, they struggle with it. They have days where they binge eat. They finish a show and they balloon up. So it doesn't matter how serious you are, how strong your willpower is. Willpower is a losing proposition. If you have to get lean just on pure willpower, you will eventually crumble. And the more you try and restrict yourself and push through, the more you're going to rebound. So I've been like, as far as what you asked, which is like, what is the philosophy, the approach of Keno Body? It's like, I always wanted to be like effortlessly lean. I want to have that lean look, the right amount of muscle, but make it something that's effortless where I can go out for dinner on a date, eat a great meal. I'm not just always dieting, pulling out my Tupperware, and I want to have a cool social life. I want to be kind of James Bond about it while still having the physique.
I love that, Greg, with the Keno Body philosophy being about sustainability, because so much in fitness is about getting people to the result, but not dealing with the after effects. I feel many people can lose weight, get lean, but it's a whole different beast to try and maintain it and sustain it long-term. I feel that is the goal that most people want to achieve, is that lean physique with enough muscle, enough strength, and having a life around it. And it seems like you've just experimented with everything, with the training, with the nutrition, trying to dial all these in to make sure that you're doing enough of each to get the desired outcome, but not doing so much that you're going to get burnt out. Because I feel that people that are trying to achieve what you've achieved, and your clients as well, they're doing something that is way too extreme, too much training volume, which turns into junk volume, which turns into fatigue, and probably creating too much of an energy demand where they can't maintain their deficit or calorie intake for the day. So I really want to pick your brain with, what is minimalist training and why do you recommend it?
Ultimately, I was all about finding what actually creates the physique you want, what creates muscle growth. And really, it comes down to progressive overload. If you have to like get down to the absolute core, if you're going to build big shoulders, what is required? Mostly, it's how strong you are. If you can build up to 100-pound dumbbell shoulder presses for 8 reps, you're going to build a tremendous amount of muscle growth. Most people get lost into, you know, these different routines and trying to get the correct and perfect amount of volume to produce muscle growth, but they're not actually getting stronger. I actually found that for me, when I just made the goal, I must get strong on key lifts. That became the goal. Okay. If you want to get very, very lean, you must be in a calorie deficit. If you want to build muscle, you must get strong on key lifts. Okay. So for me, the key lifts were incline press, weighted chin up, shoulder press, you know, Bulgarian split squats, Romanian deadlifts. Those were my key lifts. I just made the goal, I must get strong on these key lifts. And I experimented training 5-6 days a week. I experimented training 4 days a week. And I found that 3 days was really damn effective. That's when I actually experienced the best possible gains. I got amazing recovery. And again, recovery, there's muscle recovery, and there's also your central nervous system recovery, which is your brain and spinal cord. And I found that like when you do a really heavy workout one day, the next day, even if you're doing a different muscle group, you're not quite as recovered. Basically, by doing less, I actually got more results. And so minimalist training wasn't like, the idea of minimalist training for me wasn't like, I'm lazy, I don't want to go and spend that much time in the gym. It was like, how do I actually create the best physique? I always found that I'd get the best results doing a little bit less. And the more you're training, when you're in the gym all the time and you're adding in extra exercises, extra sets, sure, you feel destroyed and sure, you might be sore the next day and it feels like you're working very, very hard, but I never came back stronger. And so most people have it mistaken. They think the sign of a very, very good workout is how hard it is, how sore they get, how much total volume there is. And I scrap all of that. The most important sign of a very good workout is, did you come back stronger? Because you could do, you know, 25 sets per muscle group twice a week and be in the gym all the damn time. But if you're lifting the same 70 pounds on your dumbbell shoulder press and you're still doing 45 pounds of weighted chin-ups and you haven't achieved progressive overload and got stronger, your muscle gains are going to tap out very, very, very fast. When you hit a muscle building plateau, a lot of times the biggest cure for that plateau is to get very strong. If anyone hits, and you understand this very, very well because, you know, you do a lot of pull-up training. If anyone ever hits a plateau on their lats and how big their lats can get, dude, just add 30, 40 pounds to your weighted chin-ups. If you only do 10 chin-ups and you're complaining about your lats, like, dude, you do not understand the game at all. When you get to 100-pound chin-ups for like 6 reps, the question is, how do I get my lats bigger? The question is, damn it, I got to stop these lats from growing. They're getting too big. I can't even wear a freaking jacket. And so it's like you just get very, very strong and muscle grows. And sure, there's some nuance and you got to add some extra volume here and there, especially on stubborn muscle groups. But most people are just lifting the same weights day in, day out. And so I really stress that for naturals, doing less, tracking every single set, rep, exercise, pushing for personal records is what's going to really produce the best results.
The simplicity of that is almost too good to be true, but in the sense it's focusing on the big picture because that is actually in your control. Progressing, being more objective with your training, I think it gives you more motivation too because you're seeing things trend over time. You're having a performance focus as opposed to just coming in and just using, I guess, subjective feeling as you said there with how good the workout was. Like, how much of a pump did I get? Did I feel tired or sore during and afterwards? These are indicators that would contribute to your session being productive. But but it's based on so many other things, like how much sleep did you get, what's your stress levels, etc. Whereas a overhead press for X reps for X weight, did you beat that? Have you been tracking upwards over time? That strength correlates with the size increase. And I feel that that's just a really great way to go about doing things. And also how you've picked major compound exercises that have a large capacity for growth is key.
Yeah. And I'm all for people testing this out for themselves. Train, do a high volume, do a sensible high volume program where you're training 5-6 days a week and doing a lot of sets per muscle group. Run that for 3-4 months. See the progress that you make. See how much strength you built. Do DEXA scans. See the results. And again, I think that higher volume can work well in the short term when your body is getting accustomed to this higher amount of volume. But then quickly when strength plateaus, muscle gains quickly plateau thereafter. So I tell people, look, if you're making amazing results, keep doing your routine. When you hit a plateau, do my routines. And a lot of times people will just come back to my routines because they just start hitting PRs, they get stronger. And for naturals, we have to pay attention to our recovery. And there's something called adaptational reserves. There's only so much you can adapt and improve on. And so when you're training a ton, not only, you know, are you become more depleted, it's harder to really fight and push for that those personal records. If you're doing 5 exercises for back, it is exhausting trying to add a rep here, add a rep there, add 5 pounds there. When you diminish the training down to the key essential, it's actually what Bruce Lee talked about, like hacking away at the inessential. And so I found that when I hacked away at the inessential and just focused on a lot of the key movements and just pushing very, very hard on them, okay? Because no one can actually put in 100% intensity on 10 exercises and 5 sets each. It's not a thing. You cannot push hard to failure on 50 sets in a workout, okay? In fact, 10 to 12 sets, hard sets, is all you really have in a workout. If you can push very, very hard on 10 to 12 sets, that's actually good. That's it. You know, if you're doing 18 sets, 20 sets, you have to pace yourself. There's no way around it. In fact, the very nature, the very definition of intensity is it's limited. You know, if you're doing a 3-hour workout that's intense, it's not a thing, okay? Intensity actually means you can only apply intensity for a very short period of time. If you can do it for 3 hours, it's not intense by definition. The most important thing that I'll really stress is have the goal. Make the goal very, very clear. If you want to build a great chest, you got to get very strong on incline bench, on a flat press. And so if you focus on getting stronger on the key lifts, the muscle comes as a byproduct. You know, but a lot of times people focus on, oh, I got to eat all this food to gain muscle. I got to eat all this food. And it's very clear. If you're gaining a pound a week, it's mostly body fat. Muscle gain is a very, very slow process, you know? And again, it's a very limited process. If you stay natural, you know, I'm 5'10", 180. If you stay natural, you're not going to be 200 pounds, 5'10", packed full of muscle. There's only so much muscle you can gain while staying reasonably lean.
Now, your recommendation with the 3 times per week resistance training, do you feel that this also applies to people on the come up? Just say you've got someone new to lifting, new to training, want to build their physique. Do you feel that they could achieve your look with that minimalist, lower volume, high intensity approach? Or did you find that you had to train differently in order to achieve this and then maintain it?
Absolutely. They could achieve the maximum amount of muscle gain with 3 workouts a week. I started lifting weights at 13, and you know, for most of my teens, I was lifting 3 days a week, and I was into running then. So I do like running one day, 3 days a week. I did a little bit of bodybuilding, 4 or 5 workouts a week, and then you know, for a couple of years, and then by 19, I was back on the 3 days. And I have some pretty crazy before and after from when I was 19. I'd already trained for 6-7 years of lifting weights, but I still have a pretty crazy transformation from 19 till you know, my 24 or whatever. But you can get the absolute best results on 3 days a week. In fact, the thing when you're coming up with your physique, the question is like the goal is to get strong fast. Like the easiest way to gain muscle when you're first putting on your first 15, 20 pounds of muscle is, you know, you're lifting the 45 or even 40 pound dumbbells on shoulder press. You want to get that to 90s for 6 to 8 reps. You know, maybe you're doing 60s on incline. You want to get that to 100s for 6 to 8. Maybe you can only do 10 chin-ups. You want to get to like 90 pound weighted chin-ups for 5. Like the goal, and this is what kind of my Greek God program emphasized, it was taking kind of beginners and intermediates and getting them extremely strong in 6 months. Let's say you put on 60 pounds on a lift. Okay. So that's about, if that you're talking about dumbbells, we're going from 60s to 90s. That's per hand. If you can go from 60 pound incline dumbbells to 90s, dude, that's like you're like supporting like 15 to 20 pounds of muscle. It's usually about like to gain, 10 pounds of muscle, you got to put on 30 pounds to a lift. So on like a key upper body lift, if you can put on 60 pounds, that's like 20 pounds of muscle. If I had to start from scratch, okay, that would be really, really fun. So for example, like, let's say I snap my fingers. Okay. I've never lifted weights in my life and I'm 180 right now. Let's say I was 145 and pretty lean. And I would just focus on getting up to like 90 pounds on dumbbell shoulder press, 90 pounds on weighted chin-ups as fast as possible. I would be building up the reps, then increasing the weight, building up the reps, increasing the weight. On weighted chin-ups, I just add 2.5 pounds each week. You know, I'd focus on some shoulder presses too. But I would just, like, it is so much easier to gain strength when you're a beginner. It is so much easier. Even when I'd already been training for 7-8 years, but I still had a lot of room to get stronger, I was hitting PRs like butter, like week in, week out, PR, PR, PR. I was doing like maybe 215 on incline barbell press. And then like I'd be gaining like 10, 15 pounds a month. I just, my strength would just skyrocket. Now it's not as fun because there's not that much more strength I'm going to build. And I'd say my peak strongest was around 28, 27 to 29. Like it's late. It's usually late 20s unless you started lifting later. So I started lifting at 13. So my peak strength was in my late 20s. I'm 31 now. So I'm not, there's no more crazy bench or, incline bench PRs I'm going to be hitting. I'm just having fun with it. But, and that's also like the challenge that you do, like someone like you and me, we'll hear two things. One, oh, you must be on steroids. Two, oh, your program doesn't work. You haven't made any gains in the last year. Dude, do you understand when you've been lifting weights for 20 years, like how, what happens? Like even to gain 2 pounds of muscle on a DEXA scan would be with the same body fat would be unbelievable. Like, yeah, your first, like the best case scenario, your first year of training, you can gain 15, 20 pounds of muscle. That's like best case. And the next year, it's like half of that. So theoretically, you could put on 25 to 30 pounds in 2 years if you're starting from scratch. And that would be very, very good. That would be like training legit with pretty damn good genetics. The third year, it'd be like 4 or 5 pounds, right? Fourth year, it's like 2 or 3. After 5 years of real solid training and really impressive gains, you're just making micro improvements. And then when you've been lifting weights, and I've been lifting weights for almost 20 years, the game's just having fun with it. It's just stay lean, don't get injured, and have fun. That's it.
That's huge. I like that final thing you said there with staying injury free, because I feel that is one of the main separating factors from people that hold on to this advanced physique for as long as they want, because people get to a crossroads, as you said. They're going to get towards their peak level of strength, peak level of aesthetics, and part of them's not satisfied. And what does it take to get to that next level? Trying to get stronger, lifting heavier, trying to progressively overload when you're already at this really peaked level. And I subscribe to that ideology as well, Greg, because the diminishing returns from trying to set those PRs to get a little bit more muscle and a little bit leaner and a little bit stronger when you're so advanced, it's just not worth it. And I feel that that message isn't put out there enough because it's not seen as hardcore, or it might be seen as a little bit defeatist, or you're not trying to push your natural limit. But in my perspective, it's just wise.
You know what? It took me a while to really accept this, right? I was obsessed with crushing the PRs. I wanted to like get stronger and I was chasing some pretty crazy lifts. Like I managed to do 315 incline bench for 2 reps once. I have it on video, but it was just not like, and again, it comes to the point where like, dude, when you're pushing at that level and you're focusing on staying lean, like the risk of injury is higher. And for what? If I was to add 10 extra pounds, does it make that much of a difference? Like, and the law of diminishing returns kicks in. And so I think in fitness, it's tough, right? Because in fitness, we all have goals. We want to get very lean. We want to gain muscle. And sometimes it's hard to like really accept that you're pretty much there. You always want that next little bit, the next little bit. And so it can be hard because, you know, I remember when I was first getting very lean at 19, I got to a pretty low body fat, and then I still thought I had five more pounds to lose. And so what you have to do is kind of separate. Like, you can't have your entire identity based on how you look or how strong you are. If your whole identity is how strong you are, how low your body fat is, and that's where you get your sense of self-worth, it's going to be like a darkness, like nothing else. It's never going to be enough. You're going to be freaking out if your weight goes up. You know, you're going to be falling into, you know, patterns of dieting hard and binge eating. You're going to be pushing for PRs that you should not push for, and then you're going to get injured. You have to like be a little more relaxed about it. And yes, focus on your goals and getting there. But, you know, I had to like kind of calm down. I'm like, hey, you know what? I'm totally cool with it. Like I, you know, even if I'm just doing, you know, a bit less weight than I peaked at, and just kind of getting in some good reps and all that, it's totally cool. Like, once you, like, the game is get very strong. That's what it's going to be the easiest path to build the physique you want. Just get very strong on the key lifts, get to a really good level. And what's funny is that when you build your physique that way, the muscle is way more consistent. You could take a week off the gym, you still look good. When you're the guy in the gym doing 25 sets per muscle group in the gym 5 days a week, when it's arm day, your arms look great. Okay. When it's chest day, your arms look flat and your chest looks big. And then when you take a week off, you're like, where's the muscle going? And you feel like you're in this rat race. You always have to be in the gym getting pumped up to look good. But when you build muscle off lower volume, getting very, very strong, and even doing body weight training, doing some cool, you know, one arm chin up training, one arm handstand push ups, like your physique, and you build that muscle off just getting a very, very strong, your physique always looks good. You go on a vacation, you miss a few days, and you look like awesome. You have that muscle density. So the game is get strong, like absolutely get strong. But then, man, once you're at a good level, like once you're at a high quality level, then just, you know, you relax a bit and just, you know, you can. Like, even that's also why I recommend people do a bodyweight training, because, you know, let's say you built up some good strength on some lifts. Okay. You want to challenge yourself in a new way, work on getting up to handstand pushups or getting up to, you know, some one arm chin up training or one arm pushup, like mix it up when you can. And that's what makes it fun. As you've been training for 10 years, you like the muscle you've built, then just find new things to tackle. And then it just gives you a little bit of variety, and you will start to make very fast progress when you're doing something different. If you've never done bodyweight training before, you're going to be weak at it, and then you're going to make really, really quick progress. And then when you go back to the weights, I actually, crazy enough, dude, I have all my DEXA scans, right? I have all my DEXA scans over 8 years. I actually hit my highest amount of muscle, the highest amount of lean body mass I had on my body. Literally, I was doing bodyweight training for most, I'd say 80, 90% bodyweight training. I do a little couple extra weights here and there, but I was doing about 6 months of bodyweight training. And one of the reasons why I did bodyweight training for so long was because I injured my hand. So I couldn't actually grab a bar or do dumbbell presses, but I could do hands. I could do like one arm pushups, handstand pushups. That was fine. And pulls were fine. So I did like purely bodyweight training for like 6 months. And then I went to weights and I got so fucking strong. I did a DEXA scan. It was when I did a collab with Greg Doucette. I did a DEXA scan, and that my lean body mass was higher than just doing like 2.5 years of straight weights. There was something that happened. Like when you just, you focus on bodyweight training, you get very, very, very strong. And there's some cool advantages with bodyweight training, which I believe, which is one of them is like, you know, if you're doing handstand pushups or dips, your hands are fixed and your body's moving, and it's easier to activate muscle when your hands are fixed, right? Like imagine, for a quick example, like imagine someone's listening right now. If you go over to the wall and you're pushing max force on the wall, it's very easy to create force. Now, if someone gives you a barbell, you got to push. It's a bit harder. You got to stabilize it. It's harder. When your hands are fixed, it's easier to create force. So that's one of the advantages of bodyweight training. But when you take a break from weights and you still build that strength, that power with a different modality, and then you go do weights, dude, I got incredibly strong. I think I built up to like a 380 bench, and dude, my lean body mass was super high. Now, I don't think I ever need to get to that lean body mass, to be honest. Like I like my size right now, but there was something to it. If I had to go back, if I had to recreate my best physique, I would probably do 3-4 months pure bodyweight training, and then I would kind of hit the weights very, very hard, maybe do a couple bodyweight moves here and there. But it's most people are actually missing out on a huge potential of gains they can make with bodyweight training.
That's a great recommendation there, because you're essentially substituting the main lifts with weights for calisthenics bodyweight movements. It's not like all that time you invested into the overhead press is in vain. You're doing handstand push-ups instead. It's not like the heavy rows that you were doing were in vain. You're translating that back size and general strength to your pull-ups as well. And it just allows you another round of progress, as you said, setting new strength PRs consistently over time, trying to get stronger and how that reflects into your physique. And of course, there's the whole thing you said there with the closed kinetic chain bodyweight movements versus open kinetic chain weighted movements. You're just going to start targeting different areas of your rotator cuff, which may have been neglected with weight training. And then when you transition back, you've arguably built some muscle, built some strength in those prime movers, and now you're armed with extra stability in your shoulder to be able to support heavier loads. So I'm really not surprised that you found that cyclical return to weights, body weight, vice versa, was productive for your strength and your physique.
Yeah. And like, you know what? Like the training is really, really fun. Like today, one of my workouts, I did handstand pushups, just two hard sets. I did some like one arm chin up training going side to side. I did some pistol squats on your heel elevated, some pistols. I did some diamond push-ups, and I grabbed a dumbbell and finished off some lateral raises. And it was just a simple, awesome workout. But dude, I felt incredible. And it's funny, when I'm doing heavy weights, I get hungry after. I want to eat more. When I start doing the bodyweight, and again, like I had the hardest time dieting in the world. Like my appetite is actually insane. Like it was very, very hard for me to teach myself to get very, very lean. The bodyweight training makes it a lot easier. Like I did that workout, and usually I'd be starving, and like I'm in a deficit and I feel fine. And again, I've gotten very, very lean with just lifting. Okay. But it's a bit harder. When you're lifting heavy weights and going for PRs every week and you're in a deficit, it kind of feels like you're swimming against the current. Okay. When you're doing bodyweight training, you're working on the one arm push up. Okay. You're working on pistol squats. Maybe you're working on that Nordic curl, which is awesome for your posterior chain. Maybe you're working on getting up to handstand push ups. And when the goal is to get stronger with your body weight and you're in a deficit, it just feels like you're swimming with the current. Oh, you know, we're in a little bit of a deficit, but it's not too bad. And so I actually am going to be dedicating like the next couple months, to just kind of dial the physique in with just bodyweight training and just focus on going from like 180 to like 174, 175. And then I'll probably do a little bit of back and forth. And again, it's like, it's, I think you get the most freedom and power when you use both, you know? So 100%. Yeah. Cause there, and you understand like the game that like when we are like popping off in the fitness scene, there are people that were just body weight, weights are bad. Right. And there are people that were kind of saying, oh, body weight's bullshit. You can't gain muscle body weight. And the people on kind of both camps. And the real power is when you can utilize both. You can build the best physique. If you can utilize both, I think that everyone loves lifting weights these days. Like weight training is a huge thing right now, but still people are kind of sleeping on the power of bodyweight training. And again, I'll say one more thing about bodyweight training. Okay. And I believe this to be very, very true. If you're someone, right, that's in the gym and look, I will be honest, I am blessed with very good strength genetics. Okay. I can start lifting and my body adapts quickly. Okay, I got a little bit of Nordic in my blood. I got something in my blood. I can get very, very strong. Okay, but we also hit plateaus. We all hit plateaus. It is easier to progress on bodyweight training for whatever reason. Okay, it for some reason it's easier to get stronger with your own body. So if you are in the gym and you've been stuck and you're stuck on bench press, you just can't get to a 225 pound bench press, or you can't pass a 225. If you just start working on getting very, very strong with your body weight, like it's easier to get stronger. And again, let's give a quick example. Okay. Boom. You can do pushups easily. You can do 20 pushups. Great. Okay. Put your feet on a bench. Okay. Get to the 20 pushups. Okay. You can do that easily. Now do side to side, where when you go down to the right side, you're using 70% on the right. When you go down the left, 70% on the left. Great. Now do that with your feet up on a bench. Now it's way harder. Okay. Now that's too easy. Now get a basketball or soccer ball and have your non-working hand on the basketball stretched out away from you. And it's almost like doing a one arm, you're doing like a one arm push up, but you're using a little bit of help with that one arm that's on a basketball. Okay. Do 10 reps like that. Then work on doing just a one arm push up. Like your body is primed to get very strong when you start using your own body weight. You know, same thing with chin ups. You do chin ups, You do side-to-side pull-ups. You can have a towel over a bar. Grab the towel with your non-working hand to support you. And then do chin-ups. For whatever reason, it's easier, I find, to get stronger on bodyweight training. And there's this weird thing in the YouTube sphere that I've noticed. Some of the strongest guys, even with weights, have a background in bodyweight training. Even Alpha Destiny was big bodyweight kind of guy. And I started really getting into bodyweight training when I was a teenager. I went through Ross Enemate. Where bodyweight training gets the bad rep is that the goal is to get stronger. Whenever you're going to the gym, you're trying to build a great physique, you want to get stronger. And so some people with bodyweight training, they just focus on just doing reps and reps and reps. Let's do 100 pull-ups this workout. Let's do 500 push-ups. And that doesn't work very, very well. And it's very inefficient. Same thing if you were going to the dumbbell, you're going into the gym and just doing 50 pounds on chest press. Okay. And you can do 50 reps. The first 40 are bullshit. And the last 10, you know, you're getting something out of it, but it's really not that effective. So with bodyweight training, you want to get strong. You want to build up to towel assisted one arm chin ups, full range handstand push-ups, one arm push-ups, your feet up on the bench. And you can do something really cool with bodyweight training. This is what I recommend doing is let's say you can do one arm push-ups. Okay. Do two sets of one arm push-ups and then get a nice pump set after just doing side to side for the extra reps and extra volume. So you can do two hard sets of a really tough movement and then one set for extra volume. It's kind of like my reverse pyramid training thing. But I like to do two challenging sets and then one lighter set. Same thing. Let's say you can do like five handstand push-ups. Okay, great. Now do an extra set of pike push-ups, getting the extra reps in. So you can focus on getting stronger and then doing an easier variation to get the reps in, and it feels freaking awesome. And my easiest to be consistently lean, just to be at that very low body fat, when I was doing some bodyweight training, it was easy. Like I stayed one summer, I just stayed so lean for several months with very little effort. And it was the focus on bodyweight training.
Once you understand the principles of progression for calisthenics, you're in. I feel that the people that talk down on calisthenics don't understand how to make exercise harder and ultimately more effective. So the main ones, as you were saying, Greg, was leverage-based changes to your body posture, to increase load on the working side or the working muscles. Additionally to that, why not add weight to calisthenics movements? We've got dips, we've got pull-ups. If you want to add weight to handstand push-ups, you can. With those two changes, going unilateral, changing leverages within that, and also increasing the weight, you can't tell me that you're not going to be challenged for life with calisthenics. I think that there'll always be something to challenge you within the 5 to 30 rep range with those parameters. And what I also like about calisthenics is it incentivizes you to stay lean, because everything that we're doing is moving our body through space. And if we start slacking on our training, our nutrition, we don't have the body composition that we want, then it's going to be harder for us to do these exercises. So it's built-in accountability if that is your focus. There's something about that stimulus to fatigue with calisthenics, which is just excellent in its own right. I just feel that when you're doing a workout, even if it is high volume, it just doesn't kill you as much as doing heavy sets of compounds on the weights, which allows you to stress your muscles, stay lean, and repeat that cycle for as long as you want.
Yeah, that's completely true. You don't feel as just burnt out, is the right phrase, from bodyweight training. I remember when I was doing a lot of push-ups. Push-ups work so well to build the chest. And just like you said, you can add weight, right? So get a backpack, put like a 25-pound plate in there. If you want to do heavier, do 50 pounds, whatever. If you start doing some weighted push-ups, even 10, 15 reps, you know, 2-3 sets of 10, 15 reps of weighted push-ups, you get this tremendous like pump in your chest and your triceps. Like, it's completely untapped. When I was talking about like doing my bodyweight phase, I did add some weights on some movements, and I did, you know, I would add like 50 pounds and do like diamond push-ups, my feet up, and I just got a wicked, you know, wicked activation. So it actually, weighted push-ups are one of the best things you can do to build a great chest. It works so well, weighted push-ups. If you can build up to 50 pounds and just start crushing like 20 reps, I'm not a huge fan of doing very high reps, but with push-ups, 15, 20 reps with some weight on it, like, it's really good after you do maybe some one-arm push-ups. But what's your favorite movement to do for triceps?
I would have to say for a compound exercise, the dip, because it is just so easy to overload indefinitely. And you've got a multitude of rep ranges you can use. You can change your posture on the exercise to emphasize the triceps. You can use different surfaces. So you can go from your parallel bars to your rings. It's just key as a compound exercise for overloading triceps when done with the correct technique. And with bodyweight stuff, the overhead tricep extension is incredible. Just an anatomy refresher. When you've got your arm overhead, you're stretching the long head of your tricep, and it helps to recruit all three heads of your tricep. Great stretch overhead, the stretch from both the elbow joint and the shoulder. And it's probably the key movement for isolating triceps. So you've got that recipe of compound plus isolation, quite comprehensive.
Awesome. No, awesome. That's great.
What has your experience been with high reps versus low reps when it comes to muscle gain?
So I find that, like, if I was working on getting the one arm chin up, right, or getting a Nordic curl, I find the 3 to 4 reps is really, really good for building strength. But for maximum muscle growth, I find the 6 to 10 rep range is really my sweet spot. But if I'm trying to build strength very, very quickly on a new exercise I'm trying to like build up to, like a one arm chin up, then I just like to do towel. Like, I find the 2 to 3 reps, because you can produce maximum tension. And then once your reps start going to 5 to 6 to 7, you have to, like, you can't produce as much tension. So so I find that's very, very good for strength. But for muscle growth, I always like kind of like the 6 to 10 reps.
Okay. Have you ever experimented with much higher? And what has your experience been with that?
I haven't done a ton of that much higher. What kind of rep ranges have you been playing with?
Like, we're talking like 15 to 30 on both compound and isolation.
You know what? I'm down to do that, to run that experiment, but I do know that, like, I would do like 15 to 25 reps on weighted push-ups. And that actually did work pretty well. So I did like that on the weighted push-ups. But what kind of movement are you doing that on, like pull-ups and stuff like that?
Yeah, on all the key movements, like dips as well, even if it's just your body weight. It's a great finisher at the end, as you said before. You can start with your strength-based prescription, and then you could do a drop set with your bodyweight basics like push-ups, rows, dips, those type of things. Almost enhances the effect of these seemingly easier exercises if you've been training for a while. Say if you were going to do bodyweight push-ups or bodyweight rows at the start of your workout, if someone's got a decent level of strength, they can bust out probably 30 or even more. It's not unusual for the calisthenic stuff. But once you're fatigued from doing your heavier stuff at the start of a session, it sensitizes your body to that stimulus, and you get a ton out of just that lower relative intensity of the movement.
Yeah, no, I like that. I like that. I might play around with a little bit of 15 to 20 reps on some stuff. But yeah, at the end of your workout, nice little finisher, get the reps in. And again, it's very, very helpful because some people don't have the best mind to muscle connection. I know that's kind of like a bodybuilding bro science kind of thing, but there is something to it. Like, if you're, and again, let's go back to weights, right? If you're doing a five reps on the incline dumbbell press, if you have a strong mind to muscle and your connection, using it correctly, your chest should feel pumped after 5 reps. Now, that's a hard thing to do for a lot of people. The easiest way to really start to get that mind to muscle connection is to do higher reps. If you're doing, if you're trying to get the right feeling with a heavy weight for 5 reps can be very, very hard. But if you're doing like 20 reps, it's much easier to kind of develop that proper signal. And so I've actually, and I've played around with a lot of rep ranges. I've been training since I was 13, and that's like a good sign. If you can go into the gym, do a heavy weight for 5 reps and really feel it in the right area and your chest feels pumped, that's a sign like that you're using your muscles correctly. And so I think most people can't actually get that feeling. And actually a pretty good way to start to build that is actually to do some higher rep finishers at the end of your workout to really build that mind to muscle connection.
For sure. And going off the theme of what we've spoken about today, you don't have to do 3 sets of this. Just do 1 set, try and get 30 reps. You'd be surprised at the end of a workout how fatigued you are already. This is going to be a huge stimulus for your body. And I'd argue as well that it'll help build some mental character too. Because if all you're ever used to doing is a certain rep range, you get in your comfort zone there. That's all you know. That's all you know how to push yourself. So I feel that with the right dosage, if the goal is building muscle, this type of higher rep finisher is going to do you really well.
And again, yeah, right. Just one good set of this is great. One good set is really all it takes, you know, and it's easier to mentally commit to doing one hard set of 20 to 30 reps. If you got to do that three times, you're going to have to pace yourself. You're going to half-ass it.
This episode is sponsored by Fitness FAQs. Become a bodyweight beast with our calisthenics workouts. Use the coupon code PODCAST10 at checkout to save 10% off when shopping at fitnessfaqs.com. Don't miss this discount. Start training smarter and enjoy the gains. With your minimalist workout, what is the split that you recommend?
Yep. So one day I do like handstand pushups or shoulder press and some pull-up work. So shoulders, back, and I might do a little bit of triceps. Okay. And then on that day, I would do a more of a quad dominant exercise. So that could be Bulgarian split squats, that could be pistol squats, and I could even, you can even throw in an extra little sissy squat. Okay. I got a little bit into the ATG kind of stuff, which is really, really cool. The other day, right, you do more chest. So, you know, I'd do some push-up training or some, you know, incline dumbbell bench. I'd go into some arm training. My arms are a little bit stubborn, so I like to do a decent amount of direct arm work. So you'd go into some, you know, some bicep curls and even a bit more tricep if you really wanted to. And then you'd do some posterior chain work, right? So you do some Nordic curls, you could do some Romanian deadlifts, and then finish off with face pulls. So it's that's how I do it. So basically one day it's more shoulders and back. So like overhead pressing and pull-ups, a little bit of quads, and you know, and the other day it's more chest, arms, and Romanians. And I find that split works really, really well. Like having to do upper body plus legs when you're pushing really, really hard and you're very, very strong can be a bit mentally exhausting. But by just having to focus on half the lower body, you know, okay, we're doing pistol squats today. And then the other day, you know, we're doing upper body and some pistols. The other day, you're doing upper body and some Nordic curls. It's way more fun. Because I've done training where I did my entire lower body with some upper body, and I do it for a couple of weeks, and I couldn't get around to keep doing it. Just because, like, if you're doing really heavy shoulder presses, right, and really heavy pull-ups, then you got to go and do squats and deadlifts. Like, it's fine when you're a beginner because, you know, you understand, like, when you're a beginner, you can't activate as much of your muscle tissue. So you don't get the same level of exhaustion as a beginner, okay? Most people actually have, like, most people can only tap into a small percentage of the muscle fibers they have. Part of getting stronger is, one, you're building new muscle tissue, but you're also improving your intramuscular coordination, how good you are at firing that muscle into action. And so even beginners are not even tapping close to 100% of their potential. Now, when you get very, very strong and you're able to tap into a high degree of your muscle fibers, it is so much more exhausting. So when you're doing very heavy loads and you got to do your whole lower body, it's a pretty daunting task. That's why I've never really loved, you know, I know people are really big on the full body training. I think, you know, if you like doing it, that's great, but it's hard to really push personal records on bench, on pull-ups, on squats, on deadlifts. And then again, you're not hitting three PRs on the same exercise 3 days a week. So I don't find that strategy the most sensible from a puzzle kind of piece. And then there's some research showing that after doing some leg training, you get a bigger boost in testosterone. And then if you finish off with some arms, it can help with some muscle growth in that area. How much of a difference that's going to make, who knows? But you know what? Might as well go for it if you can just do it a little extra after the legs.
It's a great approach there because you're doing 3 days a week, which on the surface doesn't seem like the traditional 5 days a week split that most intermediates would be following. But if you inspect closer, you're doing most of the body 3 days a week, and you've constructed that in a manner where you have enough energy to progress in each of those key lifts, and you're still hitting them with sufficient frequency per week to stimulate growth.
Yeah, you know what's funny? That routine I just shared with you, that's the one I do only twice a week.
Oh, twice a week. That's going to get people quite upset, Greg. That's just not enough, mate.
It's going to piss people off. So it's very, very minimalist on the legs because you're only doing like one exercise. And it's one thing for something to look good on paper, right? It's another thing to actually follow it and to get stronger off it. Because I've seen some stuff, it looks amazing on paper. This is the best program in the world. And then you go and you do it and you don't get very far. And then I've seen stuff, and I've actually written programs that on paper, you could easily be like, this is bullshit. This would never work. This is not going to work. And then you fucking do it. And it's like, what the hell? I'm getting so strong on this. To our credit, most of the fitness industry, when they hit a plateau, they're like, What new steroids do I take? Oh, now I got to go jump on roids. Now I got to do three or four different compounds. It's always been extremely important to me to build my body naturally. I want to have the best body possible naturally. I felt like the highest quality of life is as a natural. If you have some huge health reason that cannot be solved and you need to go on TRT, that's fine. But if you're a healthy dude that takes care of himself, that wants to build a great physique, absolutely the highest quality of life is going to be doing it as a natural. You're not going to get all those different side effects. And so even when I was like 17, 18 years old, I wanted to have the pride of someone telling me, holy shit, you built an amazing physique. And I wanted to have the pride knowing I did that naturally. If someone said, oh, dude, you look incredible, but then you're on steroids, the whole accomplishment, it goes out the window. If you built your body naturally, it is such an amazing feeling. We did this naturally. When you build an amazing physique and you get very, very strong, you will get people that accuse you, oh, you're on roids, there's no way you're natural, X, Y, and Z. And that's like the best compliment a natural can get. But people are like, there's no way this is possible naturally.
What advice would you recommend for people trying to optimize their testosterone levels naturally without any exogenous supplements?
Yeah. So funny enough, testosterone levels right now are lower than they've ever been. They've dropped at least 25-30% since just 1999. And it's been a bigger drop since the 80s. And the first thing to really like look at is like, why is testosterone going down? Why are average 20-year-olds having lower testosterone levels now than ever before? And there's different factors why, but there's a lot of environmental chemicals that we're exposed to in our environment. Even the person listening right now, your Old Spice or Axe body wash you lather on every day is filled with phthalates that disrupt your body's endocrine function. You know, that's one of the reasons, even the diet today, okay? And they have statistics on, what the average diet looks like now versus, 30, 40 years ago. We're actually eating a lot less, we're eating less meat, specifically less beef now, which I actually am a huge fan of steak. It's a big part of my diet. We're eating less fruits. We're actually also, we're eating a lot more like grains and oils. And usually when it's oils, it's actually like seed oils, vegetable oils, which are not great. So our diet has gotten worse. On average, we have higher body fats, and having a higher body fat is not conducive for high testosterone, and your estrogen levels are raised. And if you gain too much fat, your body can actually shut down testosterone production completely. The best thing that you can possibly do is one, sleep and vitamin D are very, very important. Like that is so important. So if you can just get high quality sleep every night, you're already way better off. If you can get the correct amount of vitamin D, whether you want to do a vitamin D supplement, which, it's good to do vitamin D plus K, whether you want to get the correct amount of sun exposure to get the right amount of vitamin D, it is so important. If there's one supplement or one thing that can really have a huge benefit for you, it's getting your vitamin D levels to the correct amount. You can get it tested. Training dialed, you want to be getting, being sedentary is not great. Even if you get less than like 4,000 or 5,000 steps a day, testosterone levels are down. You want to walk. Even hunter-gatherer ancestors walk about 16,000-17,000 steps a day. Now, I think that's a lot. Ideally, 10,000 a day, you'll be so much better off. Just walk, train intensely 3 days a week. You can even do two, but train intensely, get a lot of walk, eat a high-quality diet, fruits, steak, eggs, potatoes, sweet potatoes, high-quality diet that nourishes you. There's a few supplements that I find are very, very helpful. So the three minerals that support testosterone levels, if you're deficient in these, it could definitely suppress your levels. Zinc, magnesium, and boron. Boron is the one that actually, if you get more than you need, actually helps with testosterone, helps reduce estrogenic activity. And then, we're seeing really, really crazy results with Tongkatli, which is a herb. 200 milligrams of Tongkatli is very good at supporting testosterone levels, and it's been shown to have results in young, healthy men. And then Forskali is really, really cool. These are really cool supplements you can play with to increase your testosterone levels. You can take them individually. I put it together in our Mojo supplement, which I take every day, which I love. I told people, as soon as you get Mojo, before you take it, get your blood work done. Find out where your testosterone levels are at, right? Get your blood work done and then get it checked 2 to 3 months later. And when I did this, I was thinking, people would like maybe get like a 10% increase. Maybe their total testosterone would jump up 70, 80 points. And dude, I've had people send me blood work, and I've had maybe like 30 people send me blood work, and it's been like 90% of them have been crazy. Like I've had people increase their total testosterone 200 points. But the biggest difference we've seen is free testosterone. So about 98% of your testosterone levels are bound up to protein, right? And 2% of it is unbound. That 2% is really where most of the power comes from. That has the strongest ability to exert its function, the unbound testosterone. So you could have 700-800 total, but you could still have low free testosterone. That wouldn't be very, very good. And so your free is what actually really, really matters. And so if you can actually increase your free testosterone, you know, 30, 40, 50%, you're going to notice a difference. Now, if you increase your testosterone 10, 20%, a lot of the benefits are more like psychological. You maybe have a bit more energy. Maybe you have a higher sex drive. Maybe your mood is better. As far as like gaining muscle, you're not going to see much of a difference in muscle gain if you increase your testosterone 10, 20%. That said, if you increase your free testosterone 50%, there's going to be power in that. If you're at 10 nanograms per deciliter, okay, and for perspective, let's say you have 500 total, 10 nanograms per deciliter would be 2%, which is pretty normal numbers. If you have 10, you jump to 15, which is a 50% increase. I have a hard time believing you're not going to experience better gains. But you know, the cool thing with testosterone is that testosterone is like as a man, it's like your lifeblood. It is your lifeblood. It's not just putting on muscle. It is your energy. It is your ambition, your drive, the hormone that makes you feel masculine. Like I always, you know, it's funny. I always like as a kid, I just loved that. I was like, thank God I was born a man. Like I love being a guy. I love feeling like a man. Like, you know, I love feeling like that, you know? And it's if once your testosterone levels shut down, if they're very, very low, you lose that. You lose that ambition, that energy, that drive. You feel a bit more apathetic. When testosterone levels, a lot of times in men, anxiety, depression can often be nothing more than having low testosterone. If you normally are 600-700 and you go down to 300, of course you're going to have anxiety. Of course you're going to feel depressed. That's very, very normal. It gives you that confidence. It's for example, yourself and me, how old were you when you started training? Like
I
just
was 17 and I'm 30 now.
Great. Okay. Sweet. Sweet. When you have good high levels of free testosterone, you don't really need much motivation to hit the gym. You want to once you get a taste, you want more, And like, there's people that still go to the gym, but they kind of push half-assed. When you have high free testosterone, effort feels good. You like pushing hard. It is like the lifeblood of being a man. It supports you in so many ways. Now, again, there's examples of people taking synthetic testosterone, taking way too much, and that's really not necessary, and that can have negative implications. But when you can just get yourself to your potential or to the upper range of naturals, you're gonna have a really strong advantage. And that's what, like, when guys take TRT, usually they're just trying to get to the high level of natural, because once you start going too high, there's negative implications. But when you can just get your T levels up, feels freaking good. And this is like a challenge today. It's kind of scary to think how much lower testosterone levels have become. And again, it's the fear, of course, is that sure, we've gone down 25-30% in the last 2 decades. Well, what happens if that continues another 2 decades? You know, if you're talking about relationships, right? A feminine woman is naturally going to be very attracted to a masculine man. That polarity is what creates attraction. If you're a man, that attraction you feel is towards kind of like that feminine energy that you're drawn to. But I just know my own parents, my father was a big picture, visionary, take action, masculine man. My mother was much more feminine and a little detail oriented, and they worked very, very well together. Now, if my mom was the same, and then, you know, like, let's just say you have, you know, a woman that's very feminine, but now a man's kind of soft, the relationship gets changed. It's not the same relationship. And I do like having that little bit of that polarity. That polarity is very, very good. That's part of the excitement of relationships and kind of meeting someone that you're drawn to. If everyone is the exact same, it's kind of boring. It's kind of nice. And it's nice to kind of be drawn to like the feminine energy and vice versa. It complements, you know, each other. And if you read a book, it's an interesting book called The Way of the Superior Man that kind of goes into the different feminine and masculine energy. And all of us, man, woman, we still have some feminine, masculine. when you can be completely in your masculine, you can be completely in your masculine, you can be in, you know, a bit in your feminine. And even Robert Greene, right, in The Art of Seduction, he does talk about like the most seductive men actually have a little bit. They kind of balance, they have a little bit of the yin, the yang. They have like that strong masculine element, but a little bit of feminine. So there's a little balance there, but you need to have that testosterone as a man to have the best quality of life. It's very, very hard to have a high quality of life if you're running on low testosterone.
That was a great overview on the significance of testosterone. And one thing I'll add is that we can't discount the impact of genetics on testosterone, but I say that to have people focus on what they can control, which is everything that you described: lifestyle, training, nutrition. I feel that if we're all honest with ourselves, we can always be trying to optimize or improve that every step of the way. It's a never-ending journey. It's not like you tick the box of sleep one day, one week, you're set. This is a lifestyle. And if you are truly committed to becoming the best man possible, best physique, best you can present yourself for relationships, maximizing strength, your vigor for getting stuff done in the world, then you owe it to yourself to check in each day with optimizing your lifestyle as you described.
You can even look at your hand, right? Is your ring finger, your pointer finger longer? And if you're in the womb, if you're exposed to more testosterone in the womb, then you're going to have a longer ring finger versus pointer finger. And so there's little cool little things like that. But yeah, genetics play a role, but absolutely, just like you said, most people are still, they're swimming uphill. They're doing so many things wrong. They have the brakes on their own testosterone production. Like the average man should not have 400 total T. You know, the average man should not, you know, be having these issues of not having motivation, feeling tired all the time. Like there's so much that can be improved naturally. Now, that's not to say that, like, you know, not every guy can get to an 800, 900 total testosterone. I'm not even at that, right? I have my total testosterone is in the 600s, but I just have very high free testosterone. My free testosterone is up in the 20s, but that's really kind of what matters. But not every guy can get up to 800, 900, 1,000. Not every guy is going to jump up to, you know, 24, 25 nanogram per deciliter free, but you can make a really, really good improvement and you can have a very high quality life. And then as far as how jacked you can get naturally, there's other things that matter, you know, equally, if not more, which is like your androgen receptor sensitivity density. And so like, for example, like if it was just a game of how much natural testosterone you have, then for bodybuilding, it wouldn't really matter. As long as you take the right amount of drugs and steroids, you're going to get the same result. But there's some people where their androgen receptors just soak up that testosterone like nothing else. So someone can build way more muscle at 600 total testosterone versus for someone else at 600 total testosterone based on his other aspects of his genetics and androgen receptor density and stuff like that. So if you're kind of the guys, if you're one of those guys that starts training hard, you hit the gym and you see your body changing pretty quickly, you probably have pretty good androgen receptor density. But there's guys, dude, that are on high amounts of gear that look natural as shit, that look so bad. I've seen it. I've seen people tell me that they're on this different stack, and I'm like, bro, like, you know, that's not a great thing. If you're on a bunch of juice and no one knows, like, but again, there's people that don't respond well to anabolics because, you know, they have very, very low androgen receptor density. And so they don't really don't look that much better than a intermediate natural.
And in terms of separating yourself from the average man, those statistics really drive home how low the bar is set. Like if you just get your sleep, nutrition, and training at a respectable level and you know what you can sustain and where you can put more effort into, you're going to be ahead of the majority of the population. And that's just going to put you in such a good place for yourself personally and where your position is in society, having that higher testosterone as well.
Yeah, and it's honestly really, really interesting how like testosterone can fluctuate, right? So you can get little spikes in, you know, if you go to the gym, you have a hard workout, you can get like a nice spike in testosterone. If you're playing a sport game or you're playing some competition and you win, you get a little boost in testosterone. There's little ways that your testosterone levels can fluctuate based on your environment. And I, you know, if nothing else, I just recommend people live your life to feel like a winner. Take responsibility. take action, you know, set goals. Don't turn into Mr. Victim mode and, oh, poor me. And because there's a lot of people, their negative thoughts actually influence their reality to a very, very high extent. You turn into the person where everything is negative, your life is going to get very, very poor. And then when you feel like you're always losing, when you feel like life's always going the wrong way, it actually could negatively influence your testosterone levels at little points in the day. And that can build up and stack over time. If you want to cultivate the correct environment, you want to feel like a freaking winner. You want to have self-belief. Whatever I put my mind to, I can do. That's the most important thing a man develops. One, it's like, take responsibility for your life. Wherever you are, get rid of the story for why you're there. Tell yourself, this is my fault. If I played the hand differently, I can get to where I want to go. Now, this empowers you. Once you actually take responsibility, you are empowered to transform. Now, secondly, you want to develop that self-belief where, hey, if I set a goal, if I have the goal to maybe go attract a beautiful girlfriend, if I have the goal to build a great physique, if I have the goal to get this promotion or get this or start this little business, if you have a goal, you need to deep down believe you can do it. Most people don't have that self-belief, and so they give up and become apathetic. And so one of the best things to do is set small goals, start to win. If you can create little micro wins that will build up, micro wins. If you feel like you're always winning all the time, you're going to cultivate this really awesome mood. If you're going to the gym, you're hitting personal records, you're adding rep here, you're tackling off your goals in your life, in your career, you put yourself in this really, really awesome mode. And I feel like if you can cultivate a life that makes you feel like you're taking action, you're winning, you're improving, you're leveling up, you're having this sweet lifestyle where it's not just gym or just work or just like you have the perfect balance, I feel like that can really create and cultivate a really, really good environment. If you have very, very high stress, right, and you have elevated levels of cortisol, that's also going to impair testosterone. But if you can create a really great life where you feel like you're winning, you modulate your stress, you get short stressors, but then you get rewards, and you create this great environment, it's going to be much more impactful to also producing or helping, at least at the very little, helping to support having higher levels of testosterone. And so there's a mindset component to it, which I actually believe.
Preach, brother. Couldn't have said it better myself with that whole idea of taking responsibility and the small wins along the way. I feel that when people do set goals, they can really get dejected if they don't reach that end destination straight away tomorrow. But it's about seeing those small successes over time, having positive affirmation, a positive feedback loop, and then you just keep winning, as you said. It builds on itself. Your perspective becomes your reality. I really do believe that as well. Instead of living in this state of, I don't know, disbelief or imposter syndrome or negativity, it helps to build that confidence and assurance in yourself over time that you can overcome obstacles. And if you are listening to this podcast right now, you've overcome every challenge in your life so far. So I feel that there's a great message to provide. It's not delusion. It's just self-belief and taking action and learning along the way from the lessons that life hands you and just rising to the occasion, particularly as a man. Not that any gender can't do that, but taking responsibility is key.
Absolutely. And if you are a man and you got your testosterone levels checked and they're very low, don't let that control you. Don't be discouraged. Start to take the right steps. And it might be tough. It might be tough to find the motivation. It might be tough to find the energy. It might be an uphill battle at first. And guess what? So what? You're going to have to go through that. Okay. And then as you start to take the correct steps, as you support a leaner body, a stronger body, as you nourish yourself with better food, as you do the correct steps, it's going to get easier and easier and easier. And you're going to start to feel better and better. But for a lot of people, look, the first few months are going to be tough because you're fighting an uphill battle. Your testosterone levels have come down a lot. Maybe you don't have the body you want, and it's going to be a bit of a struggle, but then it gets much and much and much better.
Keto body has become quite popular for intermittent fasting. Can you talk me through your approach for optimizing intermittent fasting for training, physique, and having a good social life?
I recommend just doing a short fast. I don't really do long fasts. I essentially fast for the first 5 hours of the day. Let's say someone gets up at like 9 a.m., then you pretty much fast till 2 p.m. So it's a short fast. It's not crazy long. And then what that does is it gives you a bit more freedom. Like it makes It makes, let's say you're on a 2200 calorie diet, it makes a 2200 calorie diet that much more enjoyable. It doesn't make it any harder. Like, I actually find that once you adapt to it, fasting for the first 5 hours is actually easy. It's super easy. You're more productive. Your energy levels eventually kick up. And, you know, if you wait 90 minutes, then have a little bit of black coffee or a little caffeine, you get really smooth appetite suppression, great energy. You feel euphoric. You feel dialed. And so I actually find the 5 hour fast is really, really beneficial. Some people don't like fasting. That's totally fine. But for a lot of people, the 5 hour fast, like 5 hours, is really, really good. And then I'd eat a moderate sized meal or a small meal with some protein, some fruit. And then I, a couple little calories here and there. And then I'd basically go and have a big feast at around dinner time. And I am someone that always likes to eat. I like to eat. I like big meals. I like steak. I like potatoes. And so when you're dieting, you have to eat small meals. It can be a bit of a drag. So this way you can actually eat awesome meals. Like, I was blown away. Like, once I started doing this, like, I was like, holy shit, look how much I get to eat for dinner. When you can't believe how much food you get to eat for dinner while getting leaner, it's almost like it flips the script. It's like, wow, this is the easiest diet in the world. It feels like I'm bulking right now based on like this massive steak and potatoes, but I'm in the deficit because I did a fast. I had maybe 600 calories for my first meal. I'm having a 1300 calorie dinner, and I still have some room for later at night for some dessert or whatever I want to finish my calories with. It's the structure just makes it so much easier to be in a deficit. Even if I'm lean bulking, I'll still do the fast, and I'm like, wow, I got to eat so much. It just, to me, it makes life fun. Now there's certain benefits of fasting. Now some people say, well, you know, a lot of these benefits are just the same benefits you get if you're in a calorie deficit. And honestly, at the end of the day, it's like, my advice for people is follow whatever you find is the most enjoyable. If you have an easier time sticking to a healthy, correct diet, fasting, then do that. If you prefer, if you find it easier, if you eat breakfast, and if you eat first thing in the morning, that helps you adhere to the right, correct calories and protein, then that's fine too. Like, I am more of a pragmatist on this. I've been huge on fasting because it made such a difference for me. I love it. I get more energy. I feel more productive. The food tastes better after you fast. It trains your dopamine system, actually. The dopamine system is all about work, then reward. That's how you train your dopamine system correctly. If you give yourself reward with no work, you're not training yourself to be a very successful person. So with fasting, you wake up, you have that tough period of that 5 hour fast, and then you get the reward. You know, and really the reward actually is more for me. It's like, I don't eat huge during the day, so it's more dinner and at night. And so you're building that association, you know, a little bit of short-term pain for long-term gain. You know, I do a little bit of a tough fast, but I get to eat this amazing meal. And humans, we've evolved, you know, mostly during the day, we didn't eat very much. We hunted and foraged during the day. And we'd have big feasts, usually one big meal a day. Even breakfast was not a huge thing for many, many years. In fact, breakfast was pretty much sublimated by Kellogg's. They had a food product, and they wanted to increase sales of their food product. So people weren't buying it. And then, you know, the meeting was all about, how do we get people to buy this food? Well, you know, at that time, most people were not even eating first in the morning. They're having lunch, they're having dinner. Where do we eat this food? Well, let's tell people that how important it is to eat first in the morning. If we can make people believe that having food first in the morning is the most important thing you do, the most important meal of the day, and then we have this simple, easy to eat food that requires like no preparation, then we can increase, you know, and we call it, like, we can term it breakfast cereal, break fast, then we can get people to, we can drive our sales. And so that was really kind of the dawn on the whole breakfast, most important meal of the day. Now, I actually believe that for overall health, there's benefits of fasting every day. And I find that if you can learn to do a fast, you can also get more productivity, and you can also enhances that your focus. And so I am huge on fasting. I don't understand people that like have to eat breakfast. I got to eat breakfast. Like, I used to feel like that. When you eat breakfast every single day, then your hunger regulating hormones adapt, and they expect food when you first wake up. So the first 5 to 7 days, even up to 2 weeks, can be a bit tough. But like, once you actually understand, and the placebo effect is very, very powerful. Once you understand that when you fast, your body is actually primed to fast. Your body actually increases growth hormone, growth hormone levels. Insulin levels are low. Even if you fast long enough, you do get some cellular repair. Once you realize that there's all these really, really cool things that happen when you fast, then it almost becomes cooler and you get more excited, more motivated to do it. Like even exercise and fasting have a lot of similarities. Spikes in growth hormone, lower insulin. So it's a powerful tool you can use.
And where does training fit into your fasting schedule?
Yeah, I like to kind of train either before I first break my fast or between like, or before dinner effectively. So if I'm eating around 3 o'clock, I'll either work out around 2 or I'll work out like, you know, 5, 6 p.m. before dinner. I find it hard to train first thing in the morning and then fast for 5 hours or four hours after. I'd rather, you know, train kind of before my first meal or after my first meal.
Yeah. And combine that with caffeine if you are going to do that in the morning, I imagine.
Yeah, for sure. Like, yeah, definitely. Even like it's harder to like first thing in the morning, I'm not that strong. Like your nervous system is still kind of waking up. So like, you know, if you're trying to do a one-arm chin-up very first thing in the morning, it's going to be a very, very hard. But caffeine can help wake up that nervous system if you are training earlier. But yeah, I always train with a little bit of caffeine.
Because of that inherent less strength first thing in the morning, doing more moderate to higher rep-based calisthenics with decent proximity to failure is a good strategy compared to trying to brute force low reps, high intensity, strength-based stuff.
Yeah, that's a cool approach.
I think you'll really like it once you get a taste of using it as a finisher first, building some, you know, consistency with how that feels and what it does to your results.
Yeah, sometimes I'd finish off one of my workouts with like max pull-ups, even after smashing like a big upper body workout, arms exhausted, and it's a nice finisher.
Cardio burning muscle is a fear that many lifters have. What's your experience been with this?
I think that doing like a moderate amount of cardio is completely not counterproductive to muscle growth. But if there's always a limit. Like if you're training for a marathon and trying to have as much muscle as possible, you're kind of getting pulled in two different directions. But if you want to do like 20 to 30 minutes of cardio training 2 to 3 days per week, totally fine. If you want to do like an hour of boxing here and there, it's not a huge issue. You just have to, like, when you're pushing for the highest level of strength and muscle, you have to be cognizant of recovery. I actually, funny enough, like, don't do tons of cardio. But I think that there's a sweet spot that really works and can have some benefits, and then you can take it too far. But do you do a decent amount of cardio?
No, like yourself, it's about finding that sweet spot with getting the benefits in terms of the body composition changes relative to what you want. So I'm similar to you. I would only be doing steps really. Like I'm just trying to average around that 8 to 12,000 steps per day. And I know this isn't traditional cardio, but from a body composition maintenance standpoint, I've found that that's been one of the best things for me to maintain my physique. And if I was to introduce cardio in the future, which I may do, I'm not going to go out and run a marathon, I don't think, because it'll conflict too much with my resistance training progress. The benefits from doing, say, a 20 to 30 minute steady state run with a zone 2, I think people say, where you can still somewhat speak, but it's a little bit difficult. You're staying within your aerobic threshold. You're going to get benefits to your VO2 max, which is going to help your lifting stuff, but it's not going to crush you because it's not too intense. It's not too frequent. And the duration isn't excessive. I feel that on this conversation of sweet spot, combining a step count with a couple days a week of moderate steady state cardio is going to be great if the goal is predominantly physique.
Absolutely. I think that's a good kind of range. Again, I'm going to be very, very clear. I rarely ever do cardio. I just strength train and I get my steps and I don't do that much cardio, and I do think there would be some value in doing a little bit, like you mentioned. But I also think that one of the best things you can do if you do want to do cardio is do something like do a martial art, play basketball, do something fun that you really enjoy and doesn't even feel like you're working out.
Who knows? This extra work capacity from a cardio perspective may be the missing piece to allow you to hit these higher rep ranges close to failure.
Yeah, for sure. I remember doing the deep test when I was in high school. That thing was torture, dude. So I actually like to just have very, very, very good speed and power for a couple minutes. And then, you know, not in the bedroom, just in the street.
I like that distinction.
I have to clarify, okay?
I feel that the beep test single-handedly made many kids despise cardio, because most of us, if we weren't involved in a team sport, would have at school been asked to do this all-out VO2 max test. And just the lung burn from not being used to any form of cardio, I think that has really warped some people's perspective from an early age.
Yeah, and this is also why, like, I want people to understand that building a great physique is not that hard, okay? I'll tell you what's hard. Competing in the 1500, competing in the beep test, that is hard. When you are pushing yourself the highest level on the beep test, regardless of your fitness level, after you finish, like, it's torturous. If you're doing an awesome workout, strength training 3 days a week, it is fun. It's not even that hard. It's hard for a few seconds when you push for that like tough set. It's not that hard. Doing the fast, getting your diet dialed, it's actually building a great physique is not that hard. Now, training to the highest level in running and in endurance competition, that shit is mentally tough.
What would you say is the biggest thing you've changed your mind on over the years regarding fitness, health?
You know, that's a good question, because I've been pretty damn dialed on my philosophy for many, many years, you know, with the fasting, the training less, the reverse mirror training. You know, I found more utility in using the correct supplements. I think when I was very young, the sort of thing I saw was a lot of people that were looking for what I want to get a great physique, I want to build muscle. What supplement do I take? And there was so much bullshit in the industry. If you walk into a supplement store and you see your friend's closet and a lot of the proteins and pre-workouts were, you know, loaded with artificial ingredients, and then a lot of the things that they were taking, it would come out very soon that they literally did not have any benefit. They just had some benefits on animal studies and they didn't actually do very much. There is a utility for supplements with the correct ones. If your first question is what supplements do I take, you've already lost. You need to have your training dialed, your nutrition dialed, your sleep recovery. If you're drinking too much, that's going to hold you back as well. Now, once you have those dialed, there's things you can do to help, right? There's things you even, like creatine, for example, is one of the most researched supplements that's beneficial for strength and muscle. Using like caffeine, L-theanine, and L-citrulline, I find really produces an amazing pre-workout with the pumps, the focus, the energy. You know, some of those ingredients I talked about are really good for helping support testosterone levels. When I was 19, 20, like part of my like pride was like, fuck it. All these people are just talking about supplements. I'm going to build an amazing physique without supplements. I'm going to build I'm going to do it without supplements. And I did. I got really, really good results. And then, down the road, I had a business partner and he was like, why are you so against supplements? I'm like, look, I told him like, hey, I'm not against supplements. I just like, there's not really that many products I'd recommend. And like, you know, we talked about pre-workouts and I'm like, well, all these different pre-workouts, they have too much caffeine. They have these different ingredients that aren't necessary. They underdose the correct ingredients. And I didn't really want to pump like artificial sweetener in myself every single day. And so I was like, well, let's create one you like. And I'm like, well, and again, I was really good friends with the guys at Examine, you know, Sol Orwell. We used to hang out all the time and he built an amazing website that has that compiles all the research of different supplements and for different benefits and, you know, kind of gets down to the brass tacks. What is the magnitude of the benefit of this different ingredient and what works, what doesn't? And it's an amazing resource. I recommend everyone check out. And I was a big fan of that site and I spent a lot of time checking it out. And I was like, well, you know, we can just do a natural, you know, pre-workout that's got, you know, caffeine, L-citrulline, L-theanine. That would be really, really cool. And we started doing this and I really, really enjoyed it. Like, I was loving this shit. I'm on it every day. You know, I take my octane every day and it feels so much better than coffee with the L-theanine. I get the blood flow. Someone has mild to moderate erectile dysfunction. There's an ingredient called pine bark extract or pycnogenol. And they've done studies where they combined it with a different amino acid. And in 3 months, 92.5% of the men taking it regained normal erections, right? And so actually we used some of those ingredients in our blood flow boosting supplement. And so there's some cool research, but back then there was so much bullshit in the supplement space that I definitely like took a bit of a stance against that industry. But there is some really, really good stuff that could be beneficial. But again, it's a supplement. It's not the whole thing.
Gregor Gallagher, thank you for sharing your insights with the Fitness FAQs podcast. Where can people find out more about your work?
Yeah, so there's two places you can really check out. My website is kinobody.com, kinobody.com. And then I'm pretty active on Instagram, which is at Greg O'Gallagher on Instagram. I got YouTube, I got TikTok, but if you just go to those two places, you can find my stuff.
Awesome, brother. Keep up the good work.
I appreciate it, man. And you too, man. It's you know, good to see the crazy feats you've achieved. It's awesome, man.
Thank you. If you enjoyed the Fitness FAQs podcast, leave a rating to show your support. See you next episode.